You're listening to Face Off, episode 107, recorded February 7th, 2011. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about all kinds of things involving web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. And before we get into our news and follow-ups, I want to thank our first sponsor, which is AgileTask, of course, the application that Mark and I and our friend Rob Lund have built. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And we got some cool features coming out in AgileTask here pretty soon, so keep your eye on it yet. And maybe we'll tell you about it and give you a chance to try it out. I'm pretty excited about them. I think these features that we're adding, in particular, one or two really are going to take it over the edge for me as for really revolutionizing my organization. AgileTask is a really great application, but there's sort of one last little thing that for me and I think for you are going to be sort of critical to taking our organization to the next step.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. I can't divulge information now. This is top secret stuff coming out of our software development vaults, locked away, coming out in another day. We'll tell you about it. But get ready to check it out because I love AgileTask, and that's why we developed it, because we love it. So let's get into our news and follow up. So Mark, I have a terrible confession. I lied to our listeners. I looked them in the eye as if they were a friend, and I lied to them, and I feel terrible about it. I lied when I said that if you have something to say, you know, send us an email and we'll read it. I lied because for the last month, I haven't checked the email. I think I totally screwed up. I think I thought my Droid was checking it or something like that. And every time we recorded, I completely forgot to check our email address, studio@faceoffshow.com.
Yeah, for a while there, we both, when we got our Droids for the first time, you know, and we were going through, we added all the emails and we added FaceOff, and we both had FaceOff on our Droids checking the email, but it became a problem because you would check it and then like archive it or delete it, and then I wouldn't see it. And then I was like, well, and then you'd be like, hey, did you see that thing? And we're like, wait, what thing?
Yeah, exactly.
So we kind of made this rule where we don't check it on our phones when we go in, but I'm guilty of it. I've totally spaced it out and forgot, and we haven't checked it. So we've got some updates from our
email. I want to say I'm sorry. We forgot to check it. And in that month, a month and a week or so of email that we didn't check, we actually had some really great emails. So I want to say thank you to Martin Fors, who was helping us. He let us know that our feed was acting up, which was a definite problem that we were fixing. Tyg Vallard, a longtime listener, a good friend of ours, tons of suggestions and just telling us thank you and talking to us about the show. So a lot of help there. Daniel Gafitescu, I butcher people's names, helping us try and find topics and ideas. And so I want to thank those guys for sending us email. I'm sorry it took us so long to get in there and see him and reply to him. So thank you so much for the emails. And I promise I am making this time, and I'm not lying this time, we will check the email. And also a couple other, just, you know, in general, I'm feeling really great. Looking at these emails, I guess one of the reasons that I guess I didn't check it was you kind of just assume that you're not getting any sort of useful emails. I mean, I get email notifications personally, not to, you know, faceoff.com about comments on our you know, episodes and stuff like that. So in general, we usually don't get a lot of emails. So I guess it really wasn't the top of my thing. But going through this and seeing all the emails from our people that I take great responsibility and that I wasn't checking it and letting them know and replying back and stuff like that made me very thankful. So these guys are awesome. I also want to thank Phil Downer, Vasily Myzin or Vasily. I don't know. You always think his name's Vasily. I think it's Vasily, but we'll have to ask him. And of course, Levi Baker, people who have been tweeting us out and stuff. And of course, the countless other people that listen and tweet. And we'll probably not count this, but thank you so much. I just want to say thank you. And I'm sorry that I slacked on the email. We promise to be better in the future.
The next update we got is the 30-day challenge. This is going into week four,
yeah.
I believe. I have not missed a day.
Me either. I mean,
there was that one day right at the very beginning that was like kind of more of a lunch than a breakfast, but it was just because we woke up late.
Yeah.
In general, but...
And that happens to me even on like this last weekend that happens, but... my goal is basically, within half an hour to 45 minutes of me waking up, I want to eat a big old breakfast.
I've gotten used to it, and I enjoy it, and I look forward to it now. It's something that I would probably be cranky if I didn't have it. I'm definitely not eating like a monster breakfast. It's just something small, but it's good. And I definitely have noticed the energy and just different.
Totally. I try and eat a monster breakfast because I figure first of all, if I'm going to force myself to eat, because right now my body is still not totally cool with eating in the morning. So, and especially if I get a big breakfast, I can eat a pretty small breakfast and usually it's okay. But if I try and eat a big one, it's after I get like, past a little chunk, it's kind of hard. But what I'm finding, so first of all, I discovered the Subway breakfast, which is totally awesome. I'll go get, especially right now, because they're all $5. So you can go get a $5 breakfast foot-long sandwich. And it's a lot of breakfast, like a foot long sandwich with vegetables and stuff on it is one heck of a breakfast. And so like every once in a while when I'm running too late at home and I have to hurry up, I'll just stop by Subway and grab a foot long sandwich like this morning. And eating that really big breakfast, it's funny. It's so hard. I'm getting better at it, but it's really hard. I'm not hungry for lunch. But the thing is I'm not starving either by the time dinner comes around. Usually like I'd eat no breakfast. And at 11 o'clock, I had to have lunch. And if I didn't have lunch, I was a really angry guy, And then come like 5 o'clock, if I didn't have dinner, I was like shaking because I was like so hungry. I was, I'd get the shakes from all the coffee and not enough food. Now if I eat a giant, a really, really big breakfast, I don't even need lunch. And by the time I get home for dinner, I'm pretty hungry, but I'm not like stuffing myself at dinner either. I'm, having... sensible dinner. It feels very good. I'm way less tired. I'm with you on that. I don't get the drowsiness as much. I'm pretty full of energy right now, and it's almost 9 o'clock on a Monday night, which usually wouldn't be the case. So, really liking 30 breakfast challenge. I'm going to keep doing it after 30 days. I'm going to try and do it, for 2 or 3 months, I think, really try and set a goal to do that so that, my body will get even more used to it. And it'll work out better. I like it. It's been a fun challenge, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, it has. Do you have any? Are you gonna try another 30-day after this one's over? You think?
Or? Totally, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun. Just the 30-day thing in general. I think I could definitely get addicted to that and try different things that are.
Yeah, it's a funny thing.
Try to form healthy habits.
Yeah, and what's funny is people look at you, it's kind of funny how people look at you weird if it's like, what are you doing? You're like, oh, I'm trying to eat breakfast. But the second you say, I'm doing a challenge to try and eat breakfast for 30 days, it's okay. They immediately don't go like, oh, that's weird or anything. It's like, I'm doing a challenge for 30 days to eat breakfast. It's like, oh, okay. but normally it's like, what are you doing? You're like, oh, I'm trying to eat breakfast every day. They're like, oh, you're weird. But like, if you make it a challenge for some reason, everyone just goes, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's even TV shows what is it called? The 30 days, I think is what it's called, where he goes to prison for 30 days. And he just, it's the same guy that did the,
Morgan
McDonald's
Spurlock.
30 days. It's just, I don't know. There's something about 30 days. It's enough, to feel what it's like to do whatever you're doing, it's enough time to start that habit.
Totally. I think a lot of people, it's different if you say, oh, I'm going to do this crazy thing. I'm trying to make it part of my life or whatever. When you say it's like a 30-day challenge, people say, okay, you're trying something for 30 days. At the end of that 30 days, you're going to, evaluate what just happened and whether or not you want to integrate it into your daily routine. So it's a little less like, faddish, it's not like, oh, I heard that you can eat, if you eat 5 pounds of nuts a day that that you'll lose weight. It's like, if you said, I'm going to eat 5 pounds of nuts a day for 30 days, then it's like, okay, well, if it doesn't work, you're going to stick to it. First of all, you're making a challenge to stick to it for 30 days. And then the 30 days is sort of an implicit review and sort of retrospective on the whole thing.
Yeah. And it's a good time frame where it's like, if you're not really enjoying it, you're halfway through, it's like, well, I'm just going to stick it out and do the 30 days and I don't have to do this forever, but it's like a challenge. So I'm going to continue. And then maybe by the end of the day or the 30 days, you might like it. You might end up liking it. Where sometimes these fads or like popular things that come out, people try, you might only do it for a week and be like, oh, that didn't work for me. You
know, yeah,
I think 30 days is a fair assessment for
most
things.
Whereas like if I did breakfast for a week, I can almost guarantee you it probably wouldn't have stuck because I didn't start getting to where I wanted it and where it gave me a lot of energy. Like the first week I felt kind of good. I didn't know, maybe a little placebo effect or whatever. But, now I know it's a definite pattern of eating a big breakfast every day leads to me having more energy in the afternoon and in the evening. So all about it. So it's very cold. Let's move on to our next little news and follow up. It's a very cold day, very snowy day out here in Montana. We had a big blizzard with tons of snow and it was drifting everywhere. And today I actually threw on my yak tracks and walked around. It was our geek tool last week, that these sort of little spiral metal things rubber things you can put on your shoes to help you slip on the ice. And when I was walking around in the snow, I looked back and man, those little like sort of metal spirals, like they really dig into the snow. So they were great. And
nice.
I was a little nervous. I wasn't sure if they would stretch over my big size 12 and a half foot, but there, the rubber is pretty stretchy and it made it. So
you were prepared. Did you kind of look at the weather and know that it was going to kind of blizzard today?
Well, this is the only problem with them I found is they don't come with like a little bag or anything like that. So I hadn't really got them dirty. So I just left them in my bag constantly next to, I always put gloves and a hat in, and then I put those inside my bag as well. And so I just happened to be lucky this morning that they were still in my bag. But I'm kind of trying to think of what I'm going to do now that they're, kind of dirty. They'll get muddy and, I guess probably if they sit by the, and dry overnight, they'll probably be okay. But I'll have to check it out. I might buy like a little cloth bag for them or something like that. The only disadvantage I can see.
I woke up this morning, looked outside, and was like, whoa, where did this smoke come from? So, that's crazy. Cool.
So another news and follow-up we have, I'm not sure if we mentioned this on the show or not, but you can get the link to it in our show notes. It's the Google Code Playground. It's their little Ajax Playground. Tig Vallard, actually, when I was going through our emails, he mentioned it about a month ago. I don't know if you mentioned this on your show yet or not, but this is really cool. So I promised him, since I screwed up and didn't check email for a month, I told him that I would talk about it on the show. So check it out. code.google.com/APIS/Ajax/playground. You can get the link in the show notes. It's a really cool place to sort of, you can play around with all of Google's APIs. They have tons of little examples of all their APIs and how to use them. And you can sort of edit and play with them right there. Really, really, really cool Google stuff. But speaking of Google, this was a big news item last week. Google is sort of officially, or not sort of, it, Google officially accused Bing of stealing their search results.
And if you read the article and you kind of look at the words they use, it appears that Google set up, in security, they kind of call it a honeypot, basically set up something that in hoping that someone's going to come along and, either exploit it or in this case, utilize it. And it definitely appears that Bing is, copying Google's results.
Well, kind of. So I guess you look at it and it's kind of a question of sort of ethics. So how they did this was Google basically would take these really random words that had no meaning, no results whatsoever, and they would inject a search result, because they're not really going to affect any users with this because it's just such a random word. No one would ever search for it. And they would inject some random link that had nothing to do with any what this big, long, fake word was, about. And then what they would do is they had engineers go on brand new cleaned laptops, open up Internet Explorer with like the Bing toolbar and the user, Microsoft user feedback turned on, and they would have them search Google for that random phrase that no one has ever searched for before and click that link. Microsoft's response to this is that one of the many things that they use for their Bing search results, one of the threads is user sort of stuff that happens in Internet Explorer and the Bing toolbar. It kind of makes sense, right? If you have this, Google made these sort of terribly random words that no one would ever have any reference to, and then did, you know, did something that is one of Microsoft's sort of things for Google. I mean, I kind of fall on Microsoft's side on this one, to be honest with you. And so, you know, when they would go to Bing later and then search for that totally sort of random goofy string, the one result that they had in Google would show up. And to me, I mean, this almost makes sense because out of all the factors, you know, if Bing has no factors to that thing except for this one little thread that is a Bing toolbar hit or something like that, it's going to make sense that that link shows up. Now, in honesty, yes, Google's search reference, you know, to that topic did come into factor there. But if it's the only factor, I mean, I kind of see how that is going to be the only thing that would show up when you search for this random thing.
So it only happens if the toolbar is there and it remembers the links that you've clicked on through Google, or is it?
Right. So there's the Bing toolbar, and I think part of the Bing toolbar is the user experience stuff or whatever, where you basically say, yeah, send stuff back to Microsoft to help, you know, help them develop products. So the Bing toolbar, and then I think Internet Explorer 8 might have this built in as well, where you can say, you know, user feedback, send stuff to Microsoft. Which when people sort of browse around, this stuff gets sent back to Microsoft, which explains how. So it's not like Microsoft is going on there and scraping Google's results literally. They're just in the Bing toolbar, it's like someone searched for a URL containing this random string, and in the end, they ended up going to this web page. So they link the two together. Now, yeah, in all honesty, part of that was Google's, you know, algorithm linking those two together. I don't know. It's definitely, it's kind of like Bing is definitely sort of scraping some, not scraping, but part of their search results are Google's search results because of this sort of, you know, Internet Explorer slip-in.
I wonder if this could potentially be exploited how many people does it take? If I make up a word, can I get any result in there? Do you think that would be plausible, or do you think Google had enough engineers that they sent enough feedback through the Bing toolbar to, you know,
the results? They only had like, I think, a couple go to each one. But I mean, still the thing stands. I mean, it's not, if Bing has 1,000 or 1,000,000 factors that go into sort of, you know, when someone searches for this, it goes to that. And Google made up these terms where there is literally no reference to this on the internet in any way, shape or form. The only thread that Bing had to work on was feedback from an explorer. Now, granted, maybe they should probably filter that out now. I mean, it sounds so vile or just evil at first. You know, it's like Bing is stealing our search results. Like, you know, basically Bing is like typing in random stuff into Google and recording the results and then altering theirs. It's like, yeah, it's kind of not the case. But it also kind of is, because when users go to Google, if they have the Bing toolbar, they go to Google and search, that sort of Google search result, what they end up clicking on and stuff, does sort of get entered into Bing.
It seems weird that, I don't know, it seems weird that Google would bring this up. I mean, Google is, 90-some% market share on search, and they're kind of hurting themselves a little bit in just playing this whole game of they did this and, you know, he said, she said.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, too, is it's so easy to get people worked up and angry at Microsoft these days that, you know, I think they sort of tried to play that to their advantage, too. Like, look, Microsoft still sucks. And it's like, well, if it was my business, I don't think I would make such a big, like, big, long accusatory email publicly without, or, you know, blog post publicly without sort of trying to resolve it internally first. But, you know, I remember thinking it seemed very un-Google to do this at the same time. It felt very, you know, like sneaky, like backdoor type stuff. So I don't know. I guess that's why I don't use the Bing toolbar.
I don't really use Bing at all. I guess I'm just used to Google and their results. But I have noticed, in general, search in general, well, I mean, I guess on Google, because it's really the only place I use, is that it's getting a lot more spammy.
Yeah,
In general, you know, like 80% of the front page on, you know, a lot of the terms that I search for are just spam blogs that have copied content from other sites and things. So
you know it, because they copy content from your blogs all the time. Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of times even, what was I looking for? What is it that there was like something on a Radio Lab where basically some guy took, you know, a Mozart symphony and stretched it out over 24 hours. And I was just looking for that. And every single thing I found was just almost not relevant. It was all spam stuff that was like, oh, link to torrents to download. And then, you know, I didn't know if it was like Creative Commons or if you had to buy it or what. But I was just looking for a way to get it either, you know, if it was mm-hmm. free to download for free or to pay for it if I have to pay for it. But it was all so spammy. It was just ridiculous. And it was like, this is useless to me.
It's funny when they also copy your links. And sometimes your advertisements, you look in Google Analytics and you'll get a referral from their link and you click on it and be like, hey, this is my article. It's on somebody else's page.
That's not
they're
right
linking
at
to
all.
My content. Well, I don't know. I guess it's leading people to my site eventually.
Kind of, but still. I mean, that's frustrating, especially you, because you had a couple really popular blogs that would get scraped constantly.
Well, it seems like Google got popular to the point they are because search was so bad back in the day, and it mm-hmm. seems like it's coming back around where search is starting to get worse.
Yeah, that's the problem, is if you have a company like Google, they're an the authoritative place on search, and they actively sort of try and tell you like how, you know, what they look for relevant content. It means that you're giving people also information to try and game the system as much as humanly possible, and there's just vast networks of people out there that are trying to game that system for their own benefit, whether or not it's, you know, relevant or not. And it's very frustrating. Yep. Sort of the nature of the beast. All right, let's get into our geek tools of the week. We actually have two of them. But in general, our theme is when, you know, we're going back to I screwed up last week. I did the Yak Tracks, and that has nothing to do with cooking or, you know, learning how to handle yourself in the kitchen. So I apologize. Back to our theme, another very important thing to have in the kitchen, especially if you're doing a lot of recipe cooking, is a digital scale. So a lot of times in these sort of when you read articles and stuff, they tell you they should tell you how much, you know, weight or mass, you know, to put something in. So a lot of times they'll mm-hmm. say, you know, 1 cup of finely chopped something, but really the more accurate measurement would be like so many ounces of something or how many grams. So a scale can be very important. Also, you can check your portion size if you're trying to watch your weight, like, you know, I am. You got to try and only eat so much stuff, and you can figure out how many calories. And it's very depressing sometimes, you know, things like, you're like, my goodness, butter. How many calories butter?
Another good use case too is for people that hate doing dishes or don't have a dishwasher. Whenever a recipe calls for, you know, a cup of flour and some sugar and some brown sugar and some this and that, if they give you the weight measurements, like you said, you can just put it all in a bowl and just hit the tear function, which zeroes out the weight on the scale at whatever weight it's currently at. And so you can just add your cup of flour and then hit tear and then add sugar. And
right.
Saves up on some of the dishes and some of the
Yeah, exactly. So tearing is really important. What it does is it basically tears the weight off that's already on there and zeroes it out, like Mark was saying. So a lot of times, like, what you do is you put your glass bowl on your scale and it'll say like, oh, this weighs so much, and you hit tear, right? And so it's zeroed out with that device on there, with your bowl on there. So then, you know, you start putting in flour, you know, it's like, oh, you need, you know, however many ounces of flour, this many pounds or pounds of flour, you know, but you start putting it in, you get to the weight that you need, and you're like, okay, and then you hit tear, boom, it's zeroed out. So same thing, you take your sugar, you need so many ounces of sugar, put sugar in till you get what you need, zero it out. You can keep tearing forever. So it's important to have a digital scale that can tear. So the ones that Mark and I just bought from Costco, really awesome. You can get the link to them in the show notes on Amazon, is the Polder Digital Slim Kitchen Scale. They were only $25. I think they were on sale at Costco when we got them. They're $30 here on Amazon. They're really cool, full glass top, like, look really great, work really well. Little digital readout.
Touch screen buttons.
Yeah, little touch buttons. But I have to plug, you know, if you're doing America's Test Kitchen, Cooks Illustrated, they've done plenty of tests, and their favorite, if you have, you know, a little extra more money to spend on a really good quality scale, is, of course, the OXO Good Grips Food Scale with a pull-out display. Great little food scale. And the best part about this is the little display with the weight on it. You can pull out, so if you're weighing something that's bigger than the thing, so you can always see the screen, you can pull the little digital screen out and weigh your stuff. They liked it a lot. Big numbers as well, so you can read what you're weighing. So make sure you get a good scale. We actually got a really good scale when we got married, and then it broke, and my wife was really sad. And then when you and I went to Costco and saw these Polders, we were pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I purchased one from Walmart is just because I was reading the cooking book that we've talked about on the show before, and they really really liked scales, and so I went out and got excited and got a scale, and it was just a it was almost 30, I think it was $30 or 30 plus, and these scales here are way better than that one, and I bought these scales, so now I have two scales, but these are just excellent. Great scales.
Two scales, you're a madman. What are you thinking?
Well, I mean the Walmart one was so terrible compared to these. So if you're looking for a scale, get one of these.
Yeah, get them. Get the links to those on our show notes where you can purchase them from Amazon. Always a great place to buy stuff. Let's get into our web apps. The first web app came to me via our friend Rob Lund, who had just recently got a Droid Pro. So, ha, he was thinking about it. He finally got a Droid Pro, and one of his favorite apps on there is the Hacker News app, which if you read Hacker News, it's a great little website. And if you don't, it's a news.ycombinator.org. Y Combinator is like a VC function. They have this old news website called Hacker News. Really awesome. Anyways, there's a web app for Hacker, or there's an app for the on the Droid for Hacker News. And Rob found that one of the features of this web app is that you can view any article on Hacker News. If you click and hold on the article, it will open it in viewtext.org. And he was like, "View, this is so awesome. You know, this app, you can go, it does everything through viewtext.org." And I was like, "I've never heard of viewtext.org." We've talked about these before, sort of these little websites that make things easier to read. And ViewText is great, especially for mobile apps, because all it does is strips all the styling, it strips the pictures, everything, and just gives you just straight text so that your browser, like especially your mobile browser, can handle it how it wants. Anymore, it's such a tough thing. I mean, I don't like ad block and I don't like getting rid of the ads, but these sites with, it's sort of the paradox of free content. You need to have ads and stuff to try and make money if the content is free. But sometimes I'm just so tired of ads and pop-ups and all this junk that sites like ViewTest.org are great. You can go to it and just put in a URL. It'll strip everything for you. They also have a bookmarklet, so you can bookmarklet a website and just click your bookmarklet to view the site in ViewText.org. They also have different themes on the website itself, which is kind of interesting. I think there's the default theme, and then there's Visual Studio 2010. And I think that Visual Studio 2010 is a way to make it look like the website you're reading is Visual Studio, and so you can sneak it past your boss. So I did it right now, and it totally looks like Visual Studio, and it has the article in the side in the middle of like where your code would be in Visual Studio. Very sneaky. Of course, we here at Face Off never advocate trying to fool your boss and try to make it look like more productive. But really, if you use it for something like Hacker News is a great resource for anybody doing programming or web technology in general. So I'm all for it.
When you first mentioned it, I thought it was maybe it strips all the images and everything, but it's actually really neat. If the images are small enough or in the main content of the page, they actually show up as well. Not sure how it does that, but that's kind of perfect, because if it's an image that's relevant to the article, it'll still kind of be there, but it strips away like the background images, things that are in the CSS.
You're totally right, yeah.
Stuff like that. So that is very cool. Because if it was just text, you might miss out on some of the pieces in the article.
Right.
But it kind of makes it mobile friendly, picks the best pieces.
Some of the features it says it has on the homepage is it extracts article content from the web pages. It combines multi-page articles into one. That's awesome. That's really smart and hard to do. It populates
RSS. How do they do that?
I don't know. It populates RSS feeds with full article content. So I think if you put an RSS feed in there, it will actually, go, and if the RSS item doesn't have the full content, it'll basically populate that with the full content for you. It extracts text from PDF files, so you can put a PDF file in there and it'll do that for you, which is really awesome. It looks beautiful on mobile phones, which I will totally say absolutely, because it looks beautiful on mobile phones because it's plain. On mobile phones, you want plain. It'll cache content, remove scripts, and it can also convert text to PDFs for you. So, very awesome, very cool web app. Thank you, Rob, for showing it to us. And especially if you have a cool web app that, or a cool app on a phone that does stuff like that, think about using viewtext.org so that you can make it easier for people to view your content.
Definitely.
Our next web app is called EventZilla. This is a really, really cool web app that is, so if you have an event where you people need to sign up and pay for it, Evanzilla is just a great website to do that for you. So basically, they claim that you can have a professional-looking event page in 5 minutes. So you can set up online registration, collect payments from people online and offline. So if people also want to schedule, you can schedule them offline so that they don't have to go through the webpage. Add multiple pricing options, set up recurring events. You get a custom event URL. And then if trying to look at what the pricing was. The pricing, I like the pricing. It was so simple. So if you're doing a free event, so like if you're scheduling a talk or something that is free, they don't charge you anything. You get a nice event page. People can register online, all that cool stuff for free. If you're doing a paid event, they only charge you $1 per attendee, and you only pay when you make a sale. So if people go online and register for your event and pay for it, it costs you $1. You only have to pay for it if they sign up for it. I'm a sucker for easy payment models these days. I mean, I just like that. It's a dollar per person. So, you know, if you have 30 people and they all register through your website, that's just, you know, $30 is what it's going to cost you.
And I assume they handle the payment, so you can just host your event and give them a URL to link to and they can pay for it?
Absolutely. Awesome. Evanzilla.com/whatever. They handle all the Visa, MasterCard, all the credit card stuff. They'll do PayPal if you want to. Really cool, really simple. And if you're doing any events like, you know, I look at like our friends over at Less Everything. They're running their own conferences, but if you want to start doing talks, like maybe and charge people for it, great website to do it. I thought Evanzilla was really cool when I came across it, and I was kind of like, wow, I feel like I should have known about this already.
Yeah. Look into the future for a face-off event, you know?
Totally. I'd love to do a face-off event if we can get enough people to come. We could do like Dignation or something, but we're nowhere near as big as Dignation. We could do a live face-off show and three people would come here in Bozeman. our good friends could come.
Yeah, I think we'd have to go with the free model, the free event.
Free model on that one, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We're always looking for conferences to go to, and you know, some of those conferences, I think like CES, it's kind of a hassle to go through all the pages to sign up. This is probably a lot easier than that. Mm-hmm.
And just do ad hoc events. I mean, I know a lot of places that are like a lot of businesses here in town and stuff that do like, you know, what do you call them? Dinners where you raise money for, you know, a charity or something like that. So, this is a great web app for them. It's really easy and pretty darn cheap. Hey, if you out there listening have some news, a follow-up or a web application or even a geek tool or a topic you want us to talk about or look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Send us an email, studio@faceoffshow.com. Like I said, I promise I will totally read it. I'm done being a slacker. And at this time, I also want to thank our other sponsor, Rocket Ship It. Rocket Ship It is the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. Rocket Ship It is shipping made easy. Go to rocketship.it. And that's brought to us by our own Mark Sanborn, big Rocket Ship It guy on campus, huh?
Yeah, if you need any shipping integration, any types of labels, rates, or whatever, it's definitely worth checking out.
Totally. So, hey, we're at our 30-minute time. So what I did want to say is that in general, we want to give our listeners, I want to give them a call for proposals. So we had, you know, we were thinking about some topic ideas for this episode, and we got so many news and follow-ups and geek tools and web apps that we figured that, you know, that we probably won't have time for topic anyways, which we don't, which is great. But I do want to ask our listeners, because I would rather have, I'd rather have a topic, you know, a really good topic that is long than web apps and geek tools anyways, because the topics are really the good meat. You know, the other stuff is fluff. All the stuff I do for the show is fluff. The stuff that you do for the show is the really informative stuff. So basically, sometimes we suck at finding topics. So if you guys have any ideas for, you know, products or cool things out on the market, or any cool sort of trends in web development or anything, or know anybody that is an expert in any cool trends or anything like that, give us some feedback. Let us know, you know, who should we interview? What should we talk about? What are some cool things that we should hit on? Because, you know, even as much as we try to learn new stuff, we really have our jobs that are kind of, you know, our own little shell. Like I tend to do a little bit of WordPress and a little bit of Ruby on Rails through AgileTask. You know, you do a couple different things. Rob, our buddy Rob, and our friends do a couple different things. But our listeners are doing all kinds of cool stuff and hearing about all kinds of new things. So we are asking you to let us know of any cool stuff that's happening out there. We always appreciate your feedback, but this time especially, we really are asking you guys to let us know what we should talk about, because that's really the most important part of the show, right? Is talking about what people want to hear.
Yeah, and you know, I know we've said it before. You know, we've wanted to do a lot more interviews, and I really do want to. So if you guys have any experts, and really they don't even have to be experts, just somebody that's passionate about doing technology, web technology, programming, or business, you know, topics. You know, you don't have to be an expert. You just, you know, like us. You, if you got something to talk about that maybe we haven't hit on, or maybe you know a little bit more about it, come on our show. Also, even if you just, you know, you're passionate about it and you want to talk about how you approach some of these problems, maybe it's different than us. We'd love to hear about it and talk to you guys. So, or your friends. So just tweet us out, comment, or send us an email of either you or somebody that you'd like us to interview. Mm-hmm. Or a project that you should check out, or you know, a topic.
Right. Like I'm gonna break the ice right now. We have a couple guys listen to the show that, you know, like one we talked about already, who is a user experience expert, UX UI guy. So we're gonna talk to him. We're gonna say, hey, you know, why don't you come on the show and tell us, you know, maybe what you're passionate about, what you want to talk about, and we'll try and get some questions to ask you and just research it a little bit like we do at the show. And I think some interviews and stuff would be great, because the truth is, if you think Mark and I are experts, then you're a fool, because man, we are not.
Yeah, and I mean, we've gone through 107 episodes now, and we there's a lot of topics yet to explore, but I feel like we're stretching. We're looking real hard. I mean, we looked for 2 hours for a topic tonight, and we're kind of coming up dry. I mean, we've talked about a lot of stuff, and it might just be because, you know, like you said, we're kind of doing certain things for our jobs or our side projects, and we don't really have a lot of we've already talked about 100 different things, 107 different topics, and it's kind of hard to come up with some more. So definitely we're looking for people that know some stuff, and also topic ideas, right? Something that we haven't talked about.
Yeah, exactly. The more, the less that you and I are an expert in whatever they're an expert in, or whatever their expertise is in, the better, because that's the stuff really the stuff that you and I sort of know and are really passionate about, we've really covered already. So that other stuff that maybe, you know, I'll even say it, maybe some Java stuff that, you know, you and I probably look over a lot because I'm just not a Java guy.
Some C# stuff maybe.
Totally.
You know, another one is the NoSQL stuff. I don't have a chance to work with any of that. I'd like to learn a little bit more about it.
So if you know some people or anything.
If you guys know anybody.
Totally. C#, Java, NoSQL. Be looking at some of that stuff. Or particular people in a project. I know we're going to try and look up some people from MongoDB. And especially after we talk about, NoSQL databases, we can talk about why MongoDB is so special and different. So anyways, asking you guys, you give us a lot of feedback anyways. And I know we're asking you to, you know, go that extra mile. But help us out. Help us out. We could use a little help sometimes, because it's sometimes you come up dry. It's just the way it is. That wraps up this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. That has our email address, our Twitter address, our Facebook address, all that stuff. Thank you for listening to the show. We always appreciate it, and we will see you guys next week.